You're listening to the Quince Podcast.
The tenuous peace in the Northeast was shattered over the weekend after a botched Indian Army security operation led to the death of six innocent civilians on 4th December. In an apparent case of mistaken identity, a counter-insurgency team of 21 para-special forces ambushed a vehicle carrying coal workers in Nagaland's Oting village in Mon district. But the situation derailed further from this point after hundreds from a nearby village attacked the army team. This led to the clash between the two sides, leading to the death of seven more civilians and one army jawan. But that was not the end of the flare-up between the two sides. Fresh violence erupted the next day as well, with dozens of protesters attacking the Assam Rifles camp in Mon in protest of the killings and clashed with the army again. Unfortunately, one more civilian died and several more were injured. In a purported video on social media, gunfire could be heard. Soon after the incident, the army in a statement said that the operation was carried out based on quote-unquote credible intelligence and expressed deep regret. But the question is, what does this completely botched operation signal about the type of intelligence received in this region? How could it go so horribly wrong? This incident also brings the focus back on the ongoing peace talks with insurgent groups like the National Socialist Council of Nagaland, talks with whom have reached a stalemate since an agreement on the framework was signed in 2015. So, how many steps back does this incident in Oting take the peace talks? To discuss the conduct of the Indian Army and where the peace talks stand, for today's episode, we spoke with Colonel DPK Pillai, a retired Shaurya Chakra awardee with experience in counter-insurgency operations, and Patricia Mukim, the editor of Shillong Times. You're tuned in to The Big Story, the podcast where we dissect the headline-making news for you, and I'm your host, Imat. To give you a geographical idea of where the incident took place, the Mon district, one of the largest districts of Nagaland, shares an international border with Myanmar and a border with Arunachal Pradesh and Assam. With all that and it being one of the stronghold of the Naga group NSCN and Assam's United Liberation Front of Assam, Mon district is an especially sensitive and volatile region. Now, coming to the incident, the army, according to NDTV, was acting on intelligence that eight militants will be travelling in a pickup truck on the Tiru-Oting road. However, in a severe intelligence failure, all the people in the truck which was ambushed were local coal miners and not militants. The report further states that no arms or ammunition were also recovered from the truck. But how did this mission go so horribly wrong? What kind of actionable intelligence does the Indian Army usually work on in this region? Is it usually reliable? We took this question to Colonel DPK Pillai, who served in this region and was actually wounded in a counter-insurgency operation in Manipur in 1994. According to him, intelligence in these regions is bound to be sketchy or half-baked, given how volatile the region is, and the informants may not always be loyal to the armed forces.
When you operate in these areas in JNK or Nagaland or Manipur or disturbed areas, you have a system of informers whom you develop, you know, you develop a basic trust with them. Now, it's not necessary that the informer who informs on the movements of your intended target, whether they be terrorists or insurgents or even, weapon carriers or whatever, that they have to be loyal to you in the sense, you know, after all, they're doing it for a little bit of money. They're not doing it with any other purpose in mind. And you never know that somebody who may not be interested in carrying out the fragile peace that was achieved here may have actually paid your informer who's been a regular informer with you for a long time, paid him a larger sum of money and told him to feed you a wrong information. And that happens. And I think that this probably is the reason why, somebody at the highest level would actually have bought into such kind of a information piece. So I think either the informer had an interest in disrupting the peace, or he was part of a larger plan where they wanted to, kind of create situations that are favorable to them. So you never know. There are so many wheels within wheels that operate in these areas.
But what explains why the 21 para-special forces did not determine if the suspects are actually the ones based on the intelligence provided? If the individuals on the truck did not appear armed or were not acting hostile, what rules of engagement should the army have followed? Was an ambush the only choice? According to Colonel Pillay, the Indian Army has always been a defensive force, and the incident shows a clear failure of following the SOP and that there are multiple ways of immobilizing a target.
See, rules of engagements are internal rules or directives that all forces, not only in India, even when you go for a multinational operation like the United Nations, you have ROEs that are coming there. So it defines the circumstances, conditions, degree, manner in which force may or may not be used, or actions you can consider as hostile or provocative, can and when you can actually use force. So these are various rules of engagement. And Indian Army has been a very cautious army, actually. If you remember, in 1992, we had General B.C. Joshi, who gave out the 10 commandments, the Chiefs of Army Staff's commandments, you know, which and I think one of the policies of the army has been that we would rather absorb casualties on our own side than inflict civilian casualties. So what has happened here is absolutely unfortunate. It's always taught in all the courses of instructions. It's taught in the courses, the pre-induction course that you go through in jungle warfare school in Warrante, all your commando course, everything talks about, you know, being defensive and, you know, not offensive. So all our actions are actually defense-oriented. In the sense, we prevent casualties to one side while minimizing the casualties on the other side. So this was, I think, very clearly a failure in the SOP in understanding and implementing it. And there are many ways and methods by which those inhabitants of the trucks could have been actually checked for their weapons and others instead of opening fire. And I'm sure that this is something, it's not something that is prescribed in our army. I definitely know, because I've been through this. I've been a commando instructor, and I understand what we teach our people. And so this is something that is very clearly, you didn't have to open fire on unarmed people. They were clearly coal miners. And so there, you could have immobilized the truck, could have made them dismount, and no. And there's no way in you could have actually opened fire until. So this is a, it's disproportionate to the force that we had. I would agree here.
Soon after the incident occurred, the Nagaland state government formed a special investigation team to inquire into the deaths of the civilians. Union Home Minister Amit Shah told the parliament on 6 December that incidents like these should not be repeated. However, he did not clarify what action will be taken against the armed forces personnel. According to an NDTV report, an FIR has also been filed at the Thizhit police station against the security forces, with charges under Section 302, which deals with punishment for murder, Section 307, which deals with the attempt to murder, and Section 34, common intention. The Indian Army statement read that it has instituted a court of inquiry to probe the deaths, adding that it will be investigated at the highest level. However, pointing to the fact that no significant action has been taken in the past against security forces, Patricia Mukhim, the editor of Shillong Times, believes that these kind of inquiries are usually to deceive the public.
Look, these inquiries are essentially meant to deceive. We know this. We've seen hundreds of inquiries leading to nothing. There's been no path-breaking inquiry that led to, you know, some reformative action, some punishment to the guilty. We don't hear about them at all because, when you have the Armed Forces Special Powers Act, it empowers the army to do a lot of things too. You know, it empowers them to act with impunity. I have been in this field for so many years. I don't recall anyone being punished, to tell you the truth. So I will maybe have to go back to check records. But if there was some path-breaking investigation, we would have remembered it, but we have heard none so far. And you know, the army will not get into a counter-insurgency exercise without the AFSPA, because they say that it's like being sent with our hands tied. And I want to remind you of what General V.K. Singh said once when he was the general, and he was asked about the left-wing extremism in central India. No, he was asked whether the army would go in there. And he had said very categorically that the army will not fight their own people. So when it comes to left-wing extremism, to the Maoists, they are considered our own people. The people of the Northeast and Jammu and Kashmir perhaps are not considered our own people. Why? I think we need to question this. This sort of statement, is very, very offending. But it was allowed to go without any questioning.
The incident also has renewed calls to repeal the Armed Forces Special Powers Act, or AFSPA, which essentially grants armed forces in quote-unquote disturbed areas special powers to maintain public order. Now, these powers go beyond the authority of the police and include powers like arresting someone without a warrant or even conducting searches without one. It is currently operational in Assam, Nagaland, Manipur, excluding Imphal, and a few districts of Arunachal Pradesh. In Parliament on 6 December, the opposition demanded the act to be repealed, with Congress's Pradyut Bordoloi stating that his head hangs in shame when the army, quote-unquote, indulges in such barbaric attacks against its own citizens. Regional political parties in Nagaland also joined in support of the repeal of the act, terming it as quote-unquote draconian in one of their statements, according to an India Today report. Patricia Mukhim believes that it is time that the army is foregone the responsibility of acting against counterinsurgency in the region, and that a new border force needs to be inducted who understands the region's complex nature.
What we have is this free movement regime, which I think needs to be reconsidered, you know, between certain kilometers between India and Myanmar, which is the area that borders Mon district and other places. It's a free movement regime because there are people from Nagaland whose skin are on the other side. So they keep moving, but this movement causes a lot of problems because drugs come in, weapons come in. So in this case, the army said that they got some intelligence that the NSCNK, the Kaplang group, would be coming in from Myanmar to Mon district, and they were prepared to catch those guys, but then they got the wrong ones. So if you had a stronger border force, you know, or a stronger border reinforcement, maybe you will not have these sort of incidents. I just feel that the Northeast should now stand as one in demanding the revocation of the Armed Forces Special Powers Act. We don't need this colonial act in this day and age. And, you know, India has seen insurgency since its birth, because the Naga insurgency dates back to then. By now, we should have come up with a separate counterinsurgency force, which is not the army. You can't involve the army in fighting your own people. This is a matter of internal security. You need a special force, and you needed to have cultivated that force, to have trained that force, you know, in counterinsurgency methods. But I don't know why we have relied on the army for so long. We can't blame the army also for, you know, overdoing things. They're trained to kill the enemy. They're trained to hit at the enemy. But here they are killing their own people.
The incident also throws a big question mark on the ongoing peace talks with the insurgent groups of Nagaland. The talks, which have been going on for 24 years, reached a stalemate over the 2015 framework agreement between the centre and the National Socialist Council of Nagaland. According to an Indian Express report, the centre's decision on Jammu and Kashmir in 2019 threw a spanner in the works, with the insurgent groups now demanding their own flag and constitution. However, there was reportedly some headway made last week with Nagaland Chief Minister Nephew Rio on 1st December stating that talks have reached a crucial stage and that he's hopeful for an early resolution. But with the incident in Oting now front and centre, will the peace talks continue the same way? Patricia Mukhim believes that the insurgents have never been interested in peace, given their request and concessions. She adds that it is difficult to read how the centre will act in regards of the peace talks.
If you ask me, nobody is interested in peace in Nagaland. Because, see, if the insurgents were interested in peace, they would not have asked for something as bizarre as a separate flag and a separate constitution. How can a country grant a separate constitution to one unit, to one of the states? And, you know, I think sometimes these militants or these insurgent outfits think that we can't see through their, you know, through their devices. The point is that, you know, when you ask for a separate flag, you're asking for a separate flag for Greater Nagalim. And Greater Nagalim includes territories in Manipur. How will the government of Manipur allow a separate flag to be flown in its territory? Because the government of India has very clearly said that not an inch of anyone's territory is going to be allocated to the idea of Nagalim, you know, which is some territories are in Assam, some territories are in Manipur. So it's very clear that there will be no territorial division. So where is that flag going to be flown? Only in Nagaland. But they are asking for more than that. And then even if they come up with a constitution, how can that constitution be superimposed on the Indian constitution, which is applicable in Manipur? So they know that these are not concessions that can be easily given, and yet they're asking for it because I think they just don't want peace. Yeah, they want to carry on the way they are at the moment. It's become an industry. Extortion is so high, and it is debilitating the economy of Nagaland and Manipur to an extent. They just don't want peace because after that they don't know what will happen to them. They're not sure. They've been in the jungles for so long. Now they've lived in camps for so long. They don't know what it is to go back to a normal life. So, you know, these are talks that are just dragging on, and then the government uses these IB, retired IB officials to talk. These are guys who are very, they're very experienced in the art of waiting and watching. They will tire, most time they tire people out. But in this case with the Nagas, they're tiring each other out because the Nagas also have been at it for 24 years and have got nothing. And, you know, it's funny that the government of Nagaland, yesterday one MLA was speaking on NDTV and he said, yeah, the peace talks are going on very well and we will have a settlement very soon. We've heard this again and again. It hasn't happened. And I'm not so sure that it's going to happen so easily unless they drop these two demands of the flag and the constitution.
There are still a lot of unanswered questions regarding the incident, from the para unit's conduct to the repeal of the AFSPA. But what can be said is that the entire operation was a big intelligence failure and showcases how unreliable the intelligence is in this region. If you like listening to this episode, please subscribe to The Big Story for episodic updates. We're available on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, JioSaavn, and most of the other popular podcast streaming platforms. For other podcasts, please log on to the Quint website, and for any feedback, please shoot an email to podcasts@thequint.com.
Thanks for listening. Log on to the Quint website and check out our other podcasts.